another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Steve Montgomery, author of The Converging Apostasy and A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency. Steve, you took me on a wild ride last time. As I mentioned last time, I had always wanted to go deeper into the traces of this, you call it apostasy, I just call it a mess of history, into Russia and the Persians, and you took me on a wild ride that I had not yet time to do. I've never showed it to you, but I've got this list of, gosh, it's probably 1,000 different names and topics that people have emailed me or they've said in the comment feeds, and I've caught it where they say, can you please research this or research the other thing? And I was telling another guy earlier today, I have become somewhat of a gatekeeper of rabbit trails. So it's turning into a mess, but there's not enough time to study the things that I want to do because I have now this task list to do, which is still fun, but there's a lot of things that I want to get into. I have also not got into the topic today. So we're going into Africa a bit. I have went into Africa as far as my history goes with Branhamism or with John G. Lake, but some of the topics you're going in today, I'm going to be much like the listeners. I'm going to be sitting back and just taking it all in rather than dishing it all out.
Yeah, that's cool, John. Whatever I find, I'm glad to bring that up too, because constantly finding new stuff. Speaking of something that's very, very current, and try to keep some of my beliefs as my beliefs and not push them to others. But since you are doing a historical research podcast, I think that the revisionist history that's occurring at this very moment in regards to the Smithsonian Museum and in their relation to the things they report about slavery, which are quite factual, and Harriet Tubman's like a songbook that she used to sing Christian tunes with, I think it's completely disgusting. And I'll leave it at that. Let people find out what they want to find out about it. But in the battle for all things woke, I think truth has to be the friend of the people, not the enemy of the people. So if you run against truth and truth tells you this is American history, pretty much have to suck it up and take it as it lies.
I find it really interesting that many of the religious leaders who have a direct conduit to the upper echelons in Washington, many of them come from backgrounds that I'm tracing that have proven to conceal their histories. So you have people who have a track record of concealing history now influencing Washington, and Washington starts doing the same thing. This is a big problem for me.
Yeah, and a big word that comes in my mind immediately with flashing lights is hypocrisy. That's all I can think of. Well, I know that you have mentioned a big interest in science fiction movies and the way that they'll show, the bad guys and the good guys and how it really pans out in a kind of an educational fashion. Well, I just happened to be watching a little bit of a movie called Prometheus, which you said you had watched also. And I found it interesting that really I'd say the main character, Elizabeth Shaw, she's confronted with all this disaster and so forth, which no need to go into it. And she's asked this question, you still believe after all of this? She doesn't answer verbally, but she answers by putting on her necklace that has a cross on it. So I think that was kind of a poignant and telling moment in the movie. Okay, the title that I was working from for this podcast, I think of it as Deliver Us From Evil, okay, but that's, the Lord's Prayer. Norse Links to Africa, which you're talking about Russia, and the Arabian world. Well, I never had really thought about Russia too much, Africa, except in the fact that C. Peter Wagner and his many NAR devotees and students, they referred to the third world countries as just blossoming with legit second century Christianity, like going back to the roots. And that's not exactly the truth. So when I say deliver us from evil, I'm thinking deliver us from their evil. And also it's kind of a play on deliver, because I know that deliverance ministries are still quite a problem and a confusion with Christians, especially charismatic and Pentecostal, but pretty much anybody. So the NAR is extremely eager to claim that church growth in Africa and in third world countries is the fruit of their labor, and also an indication of their billion soul harvest that's already begun due to their efforts. So that might be something to keep in the back of your mind as we go through this. So as always, I'm just kind of looking through the internet and talking to different folks. And I found a doctoral dissertation from 1999. The fellow has received his doctorate based on this investigation. And the title of it is Achan, Witchcraft, and the Concept of Exorcism in the Church of Pentecost. Now, this is written by Dr. Opoku Onina. And so what he was talking about when he says exorcism, he's really talking about what we would say the deliverance ministries. And he does use that word also. So the first comment is, first question, who are the Achan? I've never really heard of them, but it's a large influential ethnic group in Guyana on the west coast of Africa. They have a language which is called Twi, T-W-I. They believe in Onyan Kopong, which is the all-powerful. But he's all powerful, but he leaves the world in the hands of the lesser gods, which are referred to as Ablom. Akan traditional religion sees ancestors as the go-betweens between the living and the spirit world. And they really value prophecy and divination and see the potential for demonic possession, even with Christians. So they also as exorcism, which that's the word they use it for, which is deliverance. This turns out to be a blend of Achan beliefs and Pentecostal Christian beliefs. And so this fits with their belief system because they also believe in spiritual warfare with an emphasis on healing. And I almost thought of this as kind of like one of those breaking news comments you hear in the media sometimes. The thing that Dr. Opoku said was that charismatic demonology in the U.S. has elements of traditional African beliefs. So, John, how do you think this is even possible if it's true?
You know, it's unbelievable how many different connections in the spider web of apostasy that we're covering come back to the center of this Latter Rain movement and its precursor. You started mentioning Peter Wagner, and my mind went back to all of the research. I actually did it for my latest book, the Christian Identity to the NAR. Wagner had this book that was very, very racist called, Our Kind of People, The Ethical Dimensions of Church Growth in America, I think it is.
Wow.
And it's basically describing how we need to separate ourselves from them, but we must let their ethnic heritage evolve in the way that it evolves while we evolve differently. If you read it, it's really weird what he's trying to say. And I read it from... I spent a lot of time in the southern United States around a bunch of people who were racist. And so I know racist when I hear it. And I'm reading this thinking, that is a very highly polished way to say the same exact racist things that I heard growing up in some of the circles that I was in. But that was widely popular. And, you know, when I look at people like John G. Lake, who went to Africa, and then he's one of God's generals. He's one of these people that's well respected in this movement. Well, he went to different parts of Africa, but basically establish what was what would become the Apostolic Faith Missions, and that became a wide sweeping movement through Africa. If you go back just a little bit in time before this, Lake and F.F. Bosworth, who mentored William Branham, were in a weird cult in Zion City that was dedicated to Charles Fox Parham, who was trying to replace John Alexander Dowie. And they had a, they were performing what the newspapers openly declared as exorcisms. It was the precursor to what would evolve into deliverance ministries. And they were killing people. They were literally killing people with their deliverance. And wow. Lake goes to Africa, I believe, because there was some fear that they would be convicted over these crimes. They were real crimes. Bosworth goes into hiding, literally into the revival ministry. There's Parham escapes because he's in jail for the molestation of the young boy. Not just the young boy, but apparently there was a long trail of young children that he had inappropriately acted with and touched. So you had all of this weird mess. Well, Bosworth goes on to mentor Branham and Gordon Lindsay, whose family was in that Charles Fox Parham cult. They start training people into the deliverance ministry, essentially what Parham had established. And it became widespread. In today's world, you look at deliverance and it's people think that this is biblical, what they're doing, in the way that they're doing it, which I question that severely. But they don't know the history of it. And what's interesting is, if you talk to any one of them and say you're doing exorcism, because the movement was so strongly anti-Catholic, and the Catholics apparently owned the exorcisms to these people, they would say, "No, we don't do exorcisms. We do deliverance," and it's the same thing. They don't know it's the same thing, but they separate the two in their minds. So it has evolved into this weird mess that I have a hard time even describing it to people.
Yeah, you know, when you mention Bosworth, I'll see if I can get this quote correct, but I believe that he said something along this nature to Branham. He said, go with what you have there. Like, you know, like whatever you believe now, this is correct, and God is revealing the end time, you know, truth to you, so go with it. That turned out to be a pretty bad advice.
It's basically the same advice that Aleister Crowley had, do as thou wilt.
So, yeah, it's very apt that you bring out the connection with the Latter Rain, because the ACAN and the ACAN Society and the Latter Rain definitely rubbed elbows. So a Latter Rain teen actually visited the Church of Pentecost, which in this thesis, the writer's referring to him as the COP for short. So the Church of Pentecost in Guyana, this is where the Latter Rain teen visited in 1953, which is, as you know, Latter Rain is still kind of in full swing and spreading their tentacles. So the Latter Rain, this is like a go figure, because we already know what they did over here. The Latter Rain encouraged a break with the other Pentecostals that happened to exist in Ghana and the area. So the COP continued their connections with the Latter Rain, inviting them to minister again and again, and vice versa. That's an area I'd like to research further, because I'm not really sure when and where the Ghanaese came over here or elsewhere to minister, what they were receiving from the Latter Rain. Now, here's a big name, which I know you know of. T.L. Osborne made many visits to the Ghanaese, and he sent a large quantity on his tab of healing in his wings, which he told the COP to translate into their language of Twi. Also significantly is that the books of the Latter Rain prophet Franklin Hall were also circulating in the COP in Ghana.
And I do know that the message cult following of William Branham has a strong presence in Guyana. We would often have missionaries that would come into the cult headquarters during the gatherings and the events. So I would get to visit all of these ministers. It had a much different flavor to it, though, than what we had in the United States. And I never really knew what to make of this. Whenever I would see those people, I'm understanding now what I was feeling was they were very mysteriously spiritual in ways that didn't really match what I considered to be Christianity. But yet they still all kind of subscribe to the religious following of William Branham. So they would say he's our prophet, and we would call them one and the same. But the way that their religion had evolved was much different than the way that ours did.
Yeah, very good. And that's a seamless connection to the next portion that I have down here that I looked into. It so happens that Thomas Waite from the latter rain, he in 1948, this is like an easy prediction, but considering where he had his foot in the waters, he said that it'd be a great revival in 1948. And what did he do? He happened to have helped William Branham in the beginning of his tour of the West Coast. So that really fits what you're talking about there. And then according to Dr. Opoku, in 1949, Watt invited what he says, this is, quote, the most notable leader of the Latter Rain Revival, which he thinks was George Houghton, to speak at his Wings of the Healing Temple. And just as a quick reminder, Houghton, who I corresponded with before his death in the I think it was 1986, 87, somewhere in there. And Houghton even promoted the writings of Jacob Boehm, who, of course, is just a real out-and-out occultist, esotericist, whatever you want to call him. Then in the early 1950s, Watt became associated with right-wing politics. And I have in my notes question mark, because I bet you could find out more about that, John. I would like to know more about what is that really referring to. Opoku doesn't really give any detail. So Watt then visited the Church of Pentecost in Ghana in 1953. The COP were greatly influenced by his beliefs and practices of the latter rain, because they emphasized healing, deliverance, and made directive prophecies. So for them and for anybody else related to the latter rain and the NAR, a directive prophecy is used to name who are the apostles and prophets, you know, through the laying on of hands, and then give them direction on what to do next, where to go, who to minister to, etc. And so these interactions with the latter rain were partially responsible for the COP's great growth, which probably C. Peter Wagner is watching intently. So the global membership at this current time, or at least down around year 2000, was about 4,200,000. So kind of a go for your kind of questions, but as with the NAR, do these numbers really equal truth?
Almost every group that I have examined, whenever they publish their numbers, they're never true.
Yeah.
Simply put, they're never true.
Yeah. And so where I got really fascinated about this this blend of Akan traditions and the Church of Pentecost in Ghana, that came when Dr. Opoku talks about the latter rain's visit to Ghana. And he says that it, quote, revived prophetism that was still lurking within the psyche of the Akan Christians. So in other words, they're kind of like primed and ready to go to receive the latter rain message, which may speak to what you were saying, John, as finding the folks from Africa similar, but not quite exactly. Something else is going on. So at the latter rain services, special meetings were conducted for healing and exorcism deliverance. They continued Akan's so-called Abisa, which is called for them spiritual consultation, with divine aids such as blessed water, blessed handkerchiefs, herbs, and blessed pitchers. And some also what I think what you just called verbal hocus pocus based on their traditional beliefs. Amazingly, Dr. Opoku reports that the Lateran leaders appropriated some of these methods for themselves. That one, again, would have to be panned out a little bit further, but I found that interesting. And that he, what I forgot to mention, he had well over 100 primary sources for his investigation, for his dissertation. And he had, 1,200 personal interviews as part of that investigation. And of course, he was living in Ghana at the time. So yeah, that's a big one. Likewise, an attempt to make the gospel African was led by, as you know, John Alexander's Dowry's Church and the Zionist Healers in South Africa with similar divine aids. I find that pretty interesting because in the Bible, in Obadiah 1:21, it says, "Saviors shall come up on Mount Zion to judge." Well, Jane Lead had a lot to say about that, the Saviors, you know, being like manifest sons of God and so on. It brings up a little question, though. Do Dowry and the COP have the same take on the scripture about Zion?
That's a good question. I've looked at Dowie's version of what he considered to be Zion, and the only way that I can frame it is it looks like his view on Zion was, how do I make Zion to make money? there isn't a spiritual thing. And if you look at the 1,000-year leases or whatever they had, it was literally a means to make money and to control the people. And where it was established, I truly don't believe that he thought Chicago, Illinois was going to be the home of the Zion city. It just didn't make sense to me. But there are people who believe it. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. And it deeply ties to the British Israelism, which, when you consider Africa, that gets really interesting, because which parts of Africa do you consider to be grafted into the British Israelism, if any? You might say that some of the English planted colonies might be, you know, grafted in, and then those develop. So how do you frame that under British Israelism? I don't know that Dowry would have been connected to this very much.
Yeah. And so as you're speaking about that, now every time we start talking, I'm going to be thinking science fiction, because I can't remember which one of the Matrixes this was in. But when the people go, they have this great celebration, they go to Zion, is what they called it. And I don't know if that was 1, 2, or 3 for the Matrix.
That's Matrix Reloaded.
Okay, there you go. A true fan knows chapter and verse. That's very good. Okay, so this thing about exorcism is deliverance. So exorcism, aka deliverance, developed in the context of Abisa, which, as I said, is pretty much divination, contacting your ancestors and receiving messages from them as if they're spirit guides. Abisa also included, interestingly, speaking in tongues and healing. And then, as the title of this dissertation alludes to, the Abisa were thought to be able to hunt out witches through the revelations that they received and through their spiritual consultants. And so, yeah, they saw witch around every corner. During their prayer services, people would, this is also familiar, sob, groan, shout, and fall to the ground and roll around under the power of the spirit, as they might say. So I found something, which you can correct me if I'm incorrect on this one, but I thought this was sounding something like Branham's twisted version of piety, in which most of the things made by, say, like fashion designers are said to have been engineered by demons. Therefore, buying and wearing them would attract demons to you and your household. Also, as with Branhamism, this created an unending fear of witches and demons. Dr. Opoku compares this mindset to the healing and deliverance ministries by ministers such as Edward Irving, John Alexander Dowry, and, as you mentioned a moment ago, Charles Parham. So I did a little quick AI cheating session here, and I asked AI about some of this, about, like, say, Edward Irving. And it said, it is highly likely that Edward Irving was aware of Jane Lead's 60 propositions. What else might be highly likely?
That's just it. It's really difficult to pinpoint the areas of connectivity between the different groups, but there's a lot of cross-pollination going. I've got I won't say which cult leader, but I've got stacks and stacks of research right now on my desk from a specific cult leader that includes his notes, his drawings, his study material, where he got all of his divine revelations, all of this stuff. I'm going through, I'm meticulously cataloging it. And what I'm finding is that this person subscribed to all kinds of things, whether he believed it or not, because what he was doing was gathering subject matter for discussion, sometimes pro, sometimes con, in his sermons or his lectures, whatever. And so in doing that, some of the people he's reading from were obviously cult leaders. So he's getting information from other cult leaders and then disseminating that information to his cult. And some of the things clearly came as quote unquote divine revelation to those guys. Now that's just one person in the example, but I had a interview guest just yesterday talking on the podcast, and he was asking about the Toronto blessing, this big event. How are the people connected? How does that relate to Branhamism? And I said, you have to understand, whenever these events happen, it isn't that you just look at the host and the speakers. You have to look not only there, but once news began to spread of this, well, you had other people coming who may not have even announced themselves. Somebody may have said in the audience who is of great fame, who didn't even announce themselves. And then they may have spoken to the speakers afterwards, say, hey, that was a great speech or great sermon, whatever it is. Did you know? And then dump his information on it. So you have all this cross-pollination going. It's really hard to connect the dots, but it's interesting when you see the similarities between all of the groups. And as you mentioned, Jane Lead, it's also interesting to me that so many paths of our research all seem to go back to Jane Lead.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
The currents, the streams, whatever, of doctrinal mud that came into Jane Lead are just so absolutely non-Christian. You know, there's elements of Pentecostalism, charismatic. You say, okay, we believe a little bit differently about this and this, but we're all Christians. Jane Lead has been identified by some scholars as a Christian mystic, but when you look at it as, I don't know, maybe a Christian with your feet on the ground, at least a little bit more, hopefully, she doesn't really come across as what you think is legitimately Christian. And her sources of information are, like I said, just in the deep end of the pool of esoteric thought. Okay, so this is an introduction to the Latter Rain trained prophets of the Church of Pentecost. So I'm thinking, okay, what were they like? What are some examples? So as with the Latter Rain, the COP leadership said that if the positions of prophets and prophetesses were not recognized, they would break away from the other Pentecostals and become independent. Yeah, that sounds like straight out of the mouth of Branham and George Houghton and the whole lot of them. And the COP apostle, here's an example of one of so-called apostle, J.K. Enan, began to sell his pictures. Why? Because I find this a little bit humorous, but sad also. As with the tooth fairy, if you place these pictures under your pillow, you would receive divine revelations. So it's like a contact point Which, yeah, in the occult world, you know, you have a little doll and you poke it with needles, and that supposedly has, you know, some kind of impact on the real world. So, like some in the NAR, another prophet named John Menzies said that he could travel in the spirit world to anywhere he wanted to, so he could perform an exorcism. So he could stay in his house and you know, drink coconut milk or whatever he's doing and travel off to wherever. Now, I know that especially, I've heard that from several locations in NAR, but I think it's very prominent with the teachings of the now deceased Gwen Shaw. She was real into that, and I think she had an influence on some of the folks in the ministry at Bethel Church in the same kind of thinking. So according to Dr. Opoku's informants, which, yeah, he had those, he said the prophetess sister offers, and it looks like it sounds, offers her healing and deliverance ministries were very much like those of T.L. Osborne. So yeah, it had an impact on this prophetess. Then there's another prophetess who became very popular, was the word that Opoku wrote about it. She became popular, and her name was Mam Didi, and she supposedly raised a lady from the dead, and also did spiritual consultations for a fee. So as a result, she became very rich, bought a car, fell in love with her driver, and divorced her husband, accusing him of a lack of spiritual purity. So, no need to point fingers and get too specific towards the NAR land, but.
What's really interesting to me, having grown up in the Branham movement, there was this idea of spiritual perfection that you had to achieve in order to get to the other side. In other words, what Jesus did on the cross wasn't good enough. You also have to do this other thing, and then you can be saved. That was the religion. That was the core of the faith. That was basically the salvation plan, was save yourself. And then when you found out that the leadership, it was so problematic, the things that the leadership were doing, not all, but many of them were doing. And you find out that not only were they not perfect, they're so far more filthy than what you can ever even imagine or think of. I look at some of the histories in IHOP KC and the dates. If you just chronologically look at the dates of when did this first happen and when did the movement start growing into its prophetic movement and all of this, all the prophetic histories being written and laid down. Once you line that timeline up, you're like, oh my gosh, man, this wasn't a spiritual leader at all. How does this make any sense? So for me, I go back to this and I think there the idea of the core got what they would consider the gospel in the movement, the core was so faulty that leadership, it didn't matter what they did because they were elevating themselves into a spiritual plane higher than the people. Didn't matter what they did, because if they did, they fall, well, another leader who's in the same category will lift them back up and say, you are now restored. You are now without forgiveness, without apology, anything like this. You're now restored to the ministry, and people widely accept it.
And just kind of jumping off on that point, there's a scripture that I was thinking about in relation to that, and it says iron sharpens iron. And of course, the way that a lot of people interpret that is that by hanging out with other Christians and supporting one another, you pretty much sharpen yourself as a Christian and grow. So I call this next section, Rusty Iron Sharpens Corroded Nails. And what I mean is about bad company corrupts good character. So I would include in that the visits of Morris Sorello in 1977 and Archbishop Benson Adehosa in 1978, who both had a big impact on the COP and Ghana. Interestingly, and maybe you've already heard this one, John, Adehosa was commissioned in the ministry in 1971 by our friend Gordon Lindsay. And so Adehosa, this is another one of those wild claims, he claimed to have raised eight people from the dead, and this deeply impressed the COP in Ghana. Also were the books and cassettes of Kenneth Hagin, Kenneth Copeland, and Benny Hinn. And the word that the writer uses here, he says this enhanced the preaching of the COP ministers. They had a strong belief in territorial spirits, which of course was promoted by the Nar King himself, C. Peter Wagner, in his concept of strategic level spiritual warfare. Another influencer on the Pentecostal church that was being influenced in Ghana was the NAR-affiliated Gwynne Shaw's ideas about dislodging evil spirits in different geographic areas, and Cindy Jacobs' ideas about militant intercession. So both of those could be delved into quite a bit, and I think I've seen other people on various podcasts on your channel that do go into those things. And then here's another interesting one. Dr. Opoku also states that the influence of Pat Robertson through the Full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship is without doubt. Those are his words.
And the Full Gospel Businessmen, if you understand all of the different spider webs that they are connected to, it's really unbelievable. And I don't know if I've told you this or not, but did you know that, well, you probably obviously knew that the founder of the Full Gospel Businessmen, Dima Shakarian, was the nephew of the Kardashian patriarch.
Yeah.
Did you know that there was a co-founder who was a Branhamite who lived like 15 minutes from my house? So,
no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's really interesting if you understand that. And Charles and I were going through that history for our Revival History series. And at one point, we kind of sat down and went through the leadership in the Full Gospel Businessmen's organization. Almost every milestone that we could look at in history, there was a Branhamite who was in control at that organization. And anyway, it's crazy interesting. But when you understand the theatrical nature of what the Full Gospel Businessmen was achieving, and that it was to be operated as a business, hence the name Full Gospel Businessmen, they would definitely want to integrate a lot of these weird exorcism type spiritualism, I guess is the best word I was looking for. They would very obviously want to introduce spiritualism into the movement, because spiritualism sells tickets to the conventions.
Yeah, and I can't remember when I started hearing people say, kind of a play on words, I'm sure it wasn't when I was in the church I was in, the Word of Faith Church, but Shakarian's first name began to sound more like demons, Shakarian.
Yes. So
people would play on that, so I don't know. I don't know how that works out, but yeah, and it sounds like what the Full Gospel's businessman thing is a really great, not great for you and me or other Christians, but great for deception, is the kind of acted as a predecessor to the Seven Mountains mandate, because they're right there in business and trying to influence it as much as possible. And so, yeah, you mentioned Derek Prince earlier. So the next section I have here is Derek Prince, The Latter Rain and Beyond. So Prince himself visited Ghana in 1987. So Dr. Opoku tells us that the ideas of Prince, along with Von Basham, John Wimber, and Jack Deere, quote, found fertile ground in Ghana. It appealed to their Akan ideas about healing, deliverance, and witchcraft. So, I'm not going to make any play on words here, but the next thing has more on Prince. So Prince said that angels are the spirits of a pre-Adamic race, not mentioned in the Bible. That probably should raise a few red flags, John, because I know you about the pre-Adamic race. He also said that he was a student of the philosopher Plato. And he says, in fact, I wrote my dissertation on some of his views. I didn't know that Prince had a doctorate, but apparently he did, and it's based on Platonic knowledge. Depends on what you do with that knowledge, but a lot of people have done not so wonderful things. So like those who delved into Kabbalah, Prince says the word heaven is plural, not heaven, but heavens. So we have a plurality of God and a plurality in heaven. That's interesting. And yes, that does sound like Kabbalah to me and a lot of other esoteric teachings. Prince asserts that one can be a Christian, baptized in the Holy Spirit, and speak in tongues, yet still have demons in their life. Is it any wonder that the Achaean spirituality of the COP related well with Derek Prince?
I think we've talked about it before, but the idea of the multiple heavens, Branham would describe it as dimensions, and he, I think he may have used the word heavens, but usually it was dimensions, and he would say that there are seven of them. And what's funny is I was talking to a Hindu guy, I don't know if I've told you this story, but I was explaining what I was researching at the time, and he says, oh, well, that's Hinduism. I said, really?
Yeah.
And he pulls up, I can't remember what it was on the internet, but he pulls up and shows me the religion, the meaning of the seven dimensions, all of this stuff, and I'm scratching my head thinking, wait a minute, I thought it came out of a religion that at least claimed to be Christian, not Hindu. And the interesting part of that conversation was he was still a Hindu, but in his faith you can have multiple religions and multiple gods, right. And so he was a Hindu Christian, which was really, really odd to me. And he started preaching to me in conversation, obviously, and what was odd is he knew his Bible backwards and forwards and was actually pretty good at preaching it. And I was like, man, how does all that work? How does the one true God work with the other gods? And I don't think he was able to answer that question. But if you look at some of these ministries like you're describing and many of the different things that they're bringing in from other pagan sources, and clearly they're pagan sources, you have to wonder, do they not believe much like the Hindu guy? They're bringing in other religions, other... Branham said that the Zodiac was the original Bible. Well, if you understand where that came from, you have to wonder, well, which God are you serving? Well, many of the men who were connected to this, they knew that he was saying those things because it was widespread through the movement. And so you have to ask the question, well, which God is the whole movement serving? And are they like the Hindu guy? Do they have some other God and Jesus? What are they doing?
Yeah, and this has kind of culminated recently with other people I've seen on the internet and things that I've read a long time ago. But the idea about the seven heavens, yeah, that's been around forever because it's pretty much based on the antiquated idea that there are seven spheres, you know, like in our solar system. And so they would base each one of these spheres, each one of these planets would have a spiritual force connected with it, and you can tap into that force and so on and align the forces, whatever you want to do. So it's very interesting to me that not only Claire Prophet, I don't think we've talked about her too much, but she had the cult, it was called the Church Universal and Triumphant, which is totally esoteric and based on Alice Bailey's teachings, pretty much, on the esotericist Alice Bailey. Also, Alice Bailey herself talked about this. She called them, what was her word? She almost like paths. You can get aligned with any one of these seven schools of thought or paths of spiritual power. And very interestingly, General Michael Flynn almost made a direct quote from Claire Prophet and Alice Bailey in one of his big, you know, Christian patriot nationalist conventions that he was at. And of course, you know, the red flags went up all over the place when people heard that and said, where in the world did you pick that up? And why are you presenting it? So anyway, oh, and then the seven mountains, there's another one. So yeah, you know, no need to find sevens all over the place and make connections when they don't exist. But it is true that sometimes they do exist. And of course, Kabbalah has that idea too. So methodology and technical matters in the COP. Similar to the aids that Branham used for his so-called words of knowledge, a actual form was used and filled out by people visiting the COP in their prayer camps where healings were supposedly made. So these these little forms that they'd filled out would include complaints about witches, which were always constant in this society, family spiritual background, and strange phenomena and peculiar dreams. So this will get into something we briefly touched upon, but again, it's, you know, I can have like more than one podcast on it. But these testimonies on the forms would so-called prepare clients for deliverance. This is very similar to what was said, and this is the writer's words, not mine. This is very similar to what has been written about Erickson in a book called Evocation and Indirect Suggestion in the Communication Patterns of Milton H. Erickson. That's 1988, if somebody wants to look it up. Why is that significant? Erickson's techniques are the basis for neuro-linguistic programming, which a lot of people call NLP for short. These techniques are described as, quote, indirect suggestion in hypnotherapeutic technique, which can be used, as you might think, for either therapy and assistance in somebody working out through difficulties, or as some of the prophets that we know about can be used for manipulation. And so Dr. Opoku says, the indirect use of psychology is strong in healing and deliverance ministries. He's correct. In their so-called confessions, they talk freely about personal experience, which allows the spiritual consultant to, quote, extract information from them. Dr. Opoku says some practices related to exorcism in the COP, such as speaking in tongues, repetitive prayer, fasting, and these sorts of confession, actually make exorcisms comparable to magical formula. Dr. Opoku wisely points out, in my view, that since there is no need for training to begin a prayer camp where healings and deliverance occur, quote, charlatans who have strong personalities can easily claim spiritual encounters with the aim of getting money, as seen in the prosperity and word of faith churches. And of course, I would extend that to in the self-aggrandizement, whatever you want to call it, of the NAR churches. So my final question about this is, how do Dr. Opoku's insights fit in the context of the NAR's claims that true church growth and purity is to be found primarily in third world countries?
And that is a good question. And you hit the nail on the head with the comment about the charlatanism that has emerged in the movement. It's really difficult to tell whenever a person is being serious, or if they have a mental health condition, or if they really saw an angel. Because if you look at these guys and you sum up the entire summation of what is their doctrine, you find that it's not biblical, and yet the angel was supposed to give it to them. So if you believe it is an angel, then the next step is you have to say, well, this was not an angel of God, but the person has issues. So then you ask the question, well, is it really an angel? And is it an angel that is not from God? Or is this just simply a person who has a mental condition? But then we have the charlatanism and people who are claiming to see angels who haven't. That was widespread throughout latter rain. I don't think it's so dominant in the NAR today. Instead, what they have, they've taken William Branham's element of spoken word and they've used it like candy. God has spoken to me and now I'm speaking to you, and listen to me. Listen to what I have to say, because it's not my voice. It's coming from God. You have to listen to it. So right, it's right. such a weird mess. And to think that it's all connected to all of these things that you're finding, it's unbelievable. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, no problem, John. I'll keep it up, and I know you will too.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible. And for more about the Converging Apostasy, you can read the book The Converging Apostasy, and also A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency.